Good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Molloy here. Welcome to the program tonight. I guess welcome is the best way to get into this program. I just watched George W. Bush's speech, and two questions. How did Bush get so much younger, and how did Bush get so much darker? What in the hell? Did Obama, how long was he on, 18 minutes? What the hell was he talking about? And the bit about praying? Okay, look, you know, for some people, it was officially over with Obama a long time ago. I've tried to hold out on, not on his policies. I gave up on his policies months ago. But to hold out on the across the board over the top criticism, because that's what these right wing monkeys have been doing for so long now. These teabagger freaks and the Glenn Beck freaks, and you know, Obama's a socialist and Obama's this and Obama's that. And these rat bastard right wingers, Republicans, conservatives have poisoned the well. They've absolutely poisoned the well of criticism. If you criticize Barack Obama, you sound like you're aligning yourself with these monsters on the right. I certainly want to clear that up. I would like to see one of those lightning bolts that struck that statue of Jesus up in Ohio. I'd like to see one of those lightning bolts strike just about every one of these right-wing bastards and make them all clear out and go away. They disgust me. They're ruining the country. Having said that, let me just say that Barack Obama's performance tonight, and that's all it was a performance. That was not leadership. That was a performance. It was disgusting. Absolutely disgusting. Any hope that any of you liberals or progressives were holding out for Barack Obama, kick it to the curb. Just kick it to the curb, okay? I would not be surprised if a year from now Obama does a Lyndon Johnson and says that he is not a candidate, nor will he seek the presidency of the United States come 2012. I wouldn't be the least bit surprised. This man is in so far over his head, he has to look up to see bottom. Now, he didn't cause this BP disaster, but every single thing he's done since he's been in office has been to continue Bush-Cheney policies. From the war, to the torture, to the surveillance, to all of it. This man has had ample opportunity to reverse 8 years of fascism that apparently, like the disaster in the Gulf, cannot be reversed. I think people in this country better come to terms with something. I'm not saying everybody panic and head for the exits. But I think we better come to terms with something very clearly. And that is the move to fascism, corporatism, predatory capitalism, whatever you want to call it in this country, is pretty much a fait accompli. It's done. It's a done deal. I have listened to some of my real leftist friends tell me, you know, Molloy, you make a good story about being a democratic socialist or a social democrat, but you don't seem to understand your president. Now, this was months ago at the very beginning when I was saying, oh, well, you know, let's see what he can do. And I don't see anybody on the horizon. Do you? Maybe Chris Hedges. Maybe Michael Moore. Maybe Dennis Kucinich. Maybe. Who could even be president of this country and do it in an effective way. Again, I'm not saying head for the exits, but what the hell is left here? I mean, seriously, what do you want to do? What do you want to do? At a time when the country needs leadership, and God knows, in the past 10 years, we have had several occasions where the country desperately needed leadership. Tonight was one of those moments. Hell, 50 days ago. It's not there. It's not there. And, you know, we can blame the usual gang, or we can accept responsibility ourselves. We stopped deciding who our leaders would be I don't know, probably during Reagan, the election of Ronald Reagan. That's when the American public made a conscious decision. Well, I don't care anymore. I don't care. And politics will not tolerate, or at least will work against, a vacuum, just like nature will. And into the vacuum that you and I created by not going to the polls, by not voting, by not working for progressive candidates, that vacuum has been filled, and has been filled with a degree of mediocrity and corporatism. I've said it before, I'll say it again. Mediocrity in this country now has been raised to an art form. And when we need leadership, we have this. We have Barack Obama. We have George Bush. We have Bill Clinton. So, friends and neighbors, I don't know. This disaster in the Gulf of Mexico, you do understand, do you not, that it is not going to stop. It's not going to stop. Do you understand what I'm saying? After 57 days, if there was technology to stop this, it would have been stopped. This geyser of oil is going to continue until it either runs itself dry, so to speak, or the pressure under the earth that's forcing this out lessens to the extent that the pressure of the seawater keeps it in. If that's a possibility. I know nothing about fluid dynamics or that sort of thing. But it's not going to stop. There's no way to stop this. And there's something else. Jason Leopold, writing at truthout.org, has been spending months checking out BP and its north, its Alaskan North Shore operations. BP is on the verge in Alaska of on the North Shore of Alaska of creating another one of these, another one. It's just astonishing. I'll get into that a little bit later in the program tonight. But and also Rob Call, writing at opednews.com. I want to share some of that with you. There is all sorts of truth that's out here on the web. I tried to watch some of the news programs today during the day and the evening news. And it's just the coverage, what passes for news coverage, is getting worse and worse. I don't know. It's just when it comes to the point where the President of the United States has to tell the American people that there are religious ceremonies when the shrimpers go out, and that perhaps we should pay attention to that. I mean, what century are we living in? What age of mankind are we living in where the political leaders, whether it's a king, a dictator, a president, when the political leader suggests prayer? I mean, so things are not looking good. And I have a feeling they're going to continue to deteriorate and get much worse. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Well, one day soon, that damn border to border and coast to coast. The Mike Malloy Show. All substance, no abuse.
It is 21 past the hour. Couple emails here, but first, this is from tvnewslies.org. Just a couple of sentences here. It's pretty much all I can take. The estimated super high pressure release of oil from under the Earth's crust is between 80,000 and 100,000 barrels per day. The flow of oil and toxic gases is bringing up with it rock and sand, which causes the flow to create a sandblasting effect on the remaining wellhead device, currently somewhat restricting the flow, as well as the drilled hole itself. As the wellhead becomes worn, it enlarges the passageway, allowing an ever-increasing flow. Even if some device could be placed onto the existing wellhead, it would not be able to shut off the flow because what remains of the existing wellhead would not be able to contain the pressure. The wellhead piping is originally about 2 inches thick. I don't mean 2 inches in diameter. I mean 2 inches thick around the edges. It is now likely to be less than 1 inch thick and thinning by each passing moment. The oil has now reached the Gulf Stream and is entering the oceanic current, which is at least 4 times stronger than the current in the Gulf, which will carry it throughout the world within 18 months. The oil, along with the gases, including benzene and many other toxins, is deleting the oxygen in the water. This is killing all life in the ocean. Along with the oil, along the shores, there will be many dead fish, etc., that will have to be gathered and disposed of, and on and on and on and on. Kathleen writes, Mike, just passing this idea on, I have been encouraging everyone I know to flood the White House with the word bioremediation. Not that this will stop the nightmare in the least, but it is a function, non-toxic, non-genetically modified bacterial or mycological way of dealing with the already and ongoing flow of oil. And because I'm a psychiatric nurse, I'm also writing the White House and presidential staff to encourage Mr. Obama to not further traumatize the Gulf people by insinuating the beaches will be made perfect again. He will hurt an already hurting people. I do believe we can influence our president with reason and suggestions and the honesty he campaigned on. Perhaps in the chaos of his job, no one suggested honesty, clarity, and real solutions. This is what I sent. Your people need honesty, not placation. Please, please do not say the beaches will be made better than they were before. We want to be able to reelect you. The pressures drilled into made this into a tragedy on so many levels. Please do not cause more harm psychologically by insinuating it is going to get all better. That would be mental cruelty at best and abusive at worst. The leadership we need now is the honesty you promised prior to becoming elected. Please respect all aspects of our health and be the honest, real person I know you are. Thank you, Kathleen, and her last name, R.N. Kathleen, I just don't think that this president, or any president for that matter, is going to respond on any level. We have talked about this for years, that the presidency, as it was envisioned by the framers of this country, as a co-equal branch of government with the judicial and the legislative, that has been destroyed. As a matter of fact, so have the other two. The early framers in this country warned against corporate power. They warned and warned and warned all the way up to Eisenhower. Over and over and over again, they warned. And Americans chose to ignore it, chose to ignore the warnings. We do not have a functioning, independent government any longer. We just don't. To get one back would require, I don't know what. I don't think it can be gotten back. These teabag bastards are, you know, they are so out of their minds, these conservative freaks. Oh, we got to start the Constitution. You know, I get so sick of hearing that. Their solution is to overthrow the government and I don't know, then what? Make us all sovereign. I mean, teabaggers and conservatives are insane. They are just totally, completely brain dead insane. So what happens next? I don't know. Let me think about it during the break. Maybe I'll come up with something.
Speakers, it'll be our secret.
It's 25 before the hour. You know, if you watched any of the hearings in Congress today with the oil company executives, you saw sitting there, isn't this the way it always goes? Whether it's tobacco company executives or financial service company executives or banking executives and now oil executives or coal mining executives, these filthy lumps of human waste sit there in their $3,000 suits. Every single one of them, gray, pasty-faced white men. You wonder if these bastards ever see the sun, if they ever climb out from under their filthy rocks. And there they sit, and they tell the Congress of the United States, and therefore the American people, no, we don't have any plan. No, we don't know how to stop this. No, there's nothing we can do. And they sit there, these people who make millions and millions and millions of dollars, not make, they steal. And their filthy companies steal billions and billions of dollars. And there they sit. Over and over again. Why is it always, I know the answer to the questions, this question, gray, pasty-faced, disgusting-looking white men. Mark Perkel, who writes editorials and tosses them into the web the same way people used to put notes in bottles and toss them off the coast of Nantucket. Mark writes, we live in a nation of morons who just don't get it. That running on oil just doesn't work. Everyone expects that somehow President Obama is going to wave a magic wand and the oil spill is going to go away. The coast will be clean. The fishermen are going to start fishing again. People think that maybe if we give Obama the authority of a king, or maybe if we nuke the hole, that everything is somehow going to fix itself. It's not going to happen. It's time to get off oil because the spill has proven that oil no longer works. How many spills do we have to have before we stop drilling for oil? How many wars for oil do we have to fight before we get it? Politicians are crying over the drilling moratorium because 150,000 oil workers might lose their jobs. Good, I say. Every oil worker needs to be looking for a new job. We are a country in deep denial, and quite frankly, I hope the oil keeps spilling until America finally gets it. Until we get serious about wind and solar energy. We can, for some time, run off of natural gas and coal, but we are officially out of safe oil, and we need to stop drilling for it. So I hope the spill keeps spilling until the last politician in the pocket of big oil gets on the side of the people. I hope it gushes until the last teabagger stops saying, "Drill, baby, drill!" America has turned its back on reality, and reality has been tapping us on the shoulder trying to get our attention. Now reality has whopped us upside the head. America needs to get right with reality. We need to run our trucks on natural gas. We need to run our cars on electricity. We need to start making diesel fuel out of coal. We need to upgrade the electric grid. We need to do nuclear if we can do it safely. And we need most of all to convert to solar, wind, and hydroelectric to ensure that we have clean energy for tomorrow. And most of all, we need to have a war on stupidity, because being a nation of morons is a luxury we can no longer afford. Mark Percal. Maggie writes, "Yes, it is now crystal clear what our government has become. It is now a global oil and financial services business using our armed forces as their own private security company. And we, the people, bankroll and insure them with our tax dollars and savings. Their $1 billion profit goes into the pockets of the ultra-rich. But if their ventures lose money, the U.S. insures their losses with our treasury funds. Such a sweet deal for the privileged. With 4th of July just around the corner, we can show how patriotic we are and wave our little flags, and fat ladies and fat men can wear their red, white, and blue T-shirts too tight and talk about how it's great to live in a country with freedom and liberty. But let's face it, folks, we've been had." Well, we've had ourselves. You know, Walt Kelly had one of his characters say it decades ago. We have met the enemy and he is us. This is from Bob in Pico Rivera, California. Mike, you are correct about the catastrophic nature of the hundreds of millions of gallons of oil fouling the environment. It's a global disaster. I think this is the last chance for a long, long time to take control of our country and institute systemic changes that will move us away from the predatory disaster capitalism that dominates now. However, Obama will be addressing the nation tonight. I'm sure he will finally take the bull by the horns, let his inner progressive surface, and do the right thing. Don't you? Oh, maybe not. Bob in Pico Rivera. No, he's incapable, and it's not because he's stupid. It's not because he's a socialist. It's not because he was born in Kenya. It's not because he's an illegitimate president. It's not because this raving lunatic bastard Glenn Beck gets on national media every day and continues to pollute and destroy. Beck is one of those that should be subdued. Obama can't handle it because there is not a president who can. The system is so broken. It is so utterly, absolutely, and completely broken. And as somebody pointed out here about the warnings we've gotten from presidents, Tom writes, "Mike, beyond Eisenhower, Kennedy warned us too. He paid with his life." Yeah. There's just no way. I mean, it's... Okay, so what are you saying, Mike? What are you saying? I have no idea. Remember, this is a talk show. I don't claim to be, you know, like Beck and Limbaugh and Hannity and Neil Bortz and the rest of these neo-Nazi sons of bitches. I don't claim to have any answers. They don't either. But what they have are much bigger microphone than we have, and they have all these dunderheaded, bobbleheaded right-wing freaks listening. They're all terrified. And these right-wing talkers love the terror because it means they're going to get richer. More money. Giovanna writes, President's talk. My 88-year-old mother longs for the days of FDR, and after hearing the president speak tonight, I know what she means. Roosevelt would have taken the BP executives to the woodshed and made them an example. Roosevelt took on the rich and reveled in their hatred. Our current president? What the hell happened? Faith? That's what's going to make this all better? Determination? His performance tonight just reinforces what we've all thought. He's a corporatist and will not take these people on directly. Will not make them pay for the damage they've done. Will not tell them to let the people see the damage they've done. You're right. It's over, dear Mike. We've been sold down the river. Giovanna. Prairie 2 writes, regarding Obama, you have to expect Obama to speak to his audience in the language you understand. He has to overcome his so-called professor image, and he can't just act like Bush, so he throws prayer at them in a way, in what may be a vain attempt to connect with them. God knows if he talks science, they will want to burn him as a witch. That's true too, isn't it? From MM, Mike, what would you like to have heard Obama say and do? I ask because I want to know what you think should be done. And please don't read my letter on the air. Well, there's no letter here, and I'm not giving your real initials. So, huh? Yes, Catherine.
Well, I would have liked him to say, BP is leaving the area, and we're in charge, and we're putting scientists from around the world on a task force to come up with the solution, and we're not stranding thousands of miles of coastal communities and letting them come up with their own ideas on how to solve this problem, and just saying, hey, you know, we got nothing. What you got? You got bags of hair, you got barges, you got rocks, you got sand scrapers. I mean, what you got? You know, throw some Brillo out there. And they've got things on their websites about, you know, we welcome your ideas. Like, are you insane?
I mean, yeah, it's incredible.
We want your leadership. These communities are just out there suffering, starving, saying, what are you going to do? And I don't know.
And you know what? The nuclear industry has the same kind of disaster plan. Nothing. And you know what? The coal industry has the same kind of disaster plan. Nothing. Nothing. And you know what? Obviously, the great and invincible U.S. military and defense industry has the same kind of disaster plan. One word. 9/11. We'll be back.
It's Mike Malloy.
Children just building the cash flow, making a bank account. Let us expose the truth. Is that what the war's about? Because I don't understand. But what kind of a man should have to sacrifice his life for an area of sin? All the turmoil is making my blood boil. Because I don't want to see our people dying for oil.
10 before the hour. And a couple of the governors down on the Gulf Coast are insisting that the drilling continue. It's just madness. I mean, it's insanity. But that's where we are as a country. We've completely lost our bearings. Completely. Tom writes, Mike, Obama's speech reminded me that only a defeated people are lied to. And we are a defeated people. He has no vision of anything. And the only thing these corporations see is more profit by exploiting our resources. Resources that ought to go to build up the lives of the people in this country, its citizens. But instead, goes to tearing down not only our institutions, but our dignity and our will to live. They will never pay a dime in fines. They and their courts will hold out until the last cleanup crew member has died from toxic overload, and will then educate all the children through all the centuries to come that God caused the seas to turn to oil because girls got abortions and boys would not bow before the dictator. The rich can afford to live in underground communities with piped-in oxygen. The rest of us will just go to sleep from lack of O2, from oxygen, and nobody will ever know the difference. And what do our citizens do about all this? They watch TV and eat junk and die, while BP, with all the rights of an immortal citizen, like any other god of invincible greed, lives on to pollute another day. Tom in California. Whew. Prayer? That's what he said. Obama wants us to pray. Another town, Tom in Maryland. Mike, we're living in any number of dystopian universes predicted by countless authors. Orwell, Philip Dick, Frank Herbert, Isaac Asimov, Aldous Huxley, Kurt Vonnegut. The list goes on and on. Take your pick. And Greg in Florida, whose stuff we quoted last night about benzene and the different toxins that are flooding into the atmosphere. Some of these chemical descriptive terms are just, I don't know, they're too many syllables, Greg. He says, Mike, I don't want to overdo it here, but I just found this, and there's one line in particular that I would like you to see. This is from the Natural Resources Defense Council blog. New BP air testing results were posted yesterday from April 27th to May 26th for benzene, total hydrocarbons, and 2-butyl oxyethanol. There's still no information about other oil-related air toxic chemicals such as naphthalene and hydrogen sulfide. The BP sampling plan focuses only on workers on the large ships and appears to not include monitoring for the people on the approximately 1,500 small fishing boats helping to clean up the spill. On page 4 of the BP sampling plan, these people are dismissed as, quote, reduced priority. End quote. And it goes on with a lot of numbers here. The people are dismissed as reduced priority. I've been saying for weeks, and you know this already, not that you come to, nobody comes to this program for education. If you do, beware. But we've said over and over and over and over and over again that the most expendable part of the capitalist system is the worker. That's you and me. The most expendable part, the part that matters not a goddamn, is the worker. The worker is reduced priority. That's what BP calls the people working on the boats, reduced priority. And it pretty much has been that way since corporations were put together, since capitalism was put together. Remember, capitalism is not about people. Capitalism is the worst possible economic system imaginable. The worst. It is anti-life, anti-human, anti-planet, anti-family, anti-woman, anti-child, anti-everything. But what the corporations do, what capitalism does do, it encourages crazy religions, whether it's Judaism, Christianity, Islam. It encourages these crazy-ass religions. Ooh, go to church. Ooh, go to synagogue. Ooh, go to your mosque. Pray to your cloud being. Do it. Pray. And don't worry. yeah, everything's screwed up here for you dumbasses, but after you die, oh, there's a wonderful place prepared for you. Ah, you'll float around in the heavens. Oh, yes. My God. All right, we have a break coming here, and we shall be back. I want to touch on this thing that Jason Leopold is doing. Also, Rob Call at opednews.com. Oh, and I have a perfect example of why you should no longer support the Democratic Party under any circumstances. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. The hour. Here's a reason why you should no longer support the Democratic Party. If there are candidates out there who feel that they have to run as a Democrat, but you know they're not because they're afraid to run as an independent or a green, well, I guess you should support them. But the Democratic leadership of the House of Representatives has come up with an idea that will exempt the National Rifle Association and a couple other groups from some provisions of a proposed campaign finance disclosure bill. Now, this all stems back to the vacuum, you might say, created when the Supreme Court back in January struck down a decades-old law barring corporations from directly supporting campaigns. Now, I wonder if the Beck bastards and the rest of these people refer to this Supreme Court, these conservatives, as being activist judges. Well, of course not, because what they'll say, well, they're just undoing the damage. So back in January, the Supreme Court said, well, corporations, oh, and unions, as if there's some equivalency there. Oh, my God. Corporations can directly support political campaigns. Now, the Congress came up with a bill that would ban government contractors from contributing to campaigns. It would prevent federal TARP money recipients from using that money to influence elections and prevent foreign nationals and countries from contributing to campaigns. The measure also would require corporate chief executive officers to appear in political ads that their companies help pay for and say that he or she approves this message. Well, that's what the law, the proposed law. While calling it distasteful, what happened was several open government advocacy groups said today that they support this deal crafted by the Democrats that will exempt the NRA, oh, and the Red Cross, oh, and the AARP from this bill. While calling it distasteful, some open government advocates said that the NRA exemption was the only way the Democrats could remove NRA opposition to the so-called Disclose Act and get the bill to the floor of the House for a vote as early as this week. So the only way that you could deal with NRA opposition to this bill would be to appease the filthy bastards. Appease them. Now, I wonder if Glenn Beck and the rest of these creepy bastards on right-wing talk radio and television will refer... Oh, never mind. Well, you know, why bother? Sarah Dufendach, the Vice President for Legislative Affairs for Common Cause, a government watchdog group, said, quote, "The reality is the NRA controls a goodly number of the members of Congress, and those members are not going to vote for a bill that the NRA is against. You have to balance what you get in the disclosure bill versus what the NRA gets. You don't want to kill a good bill because of one provision." Jesus, God. The NRA initially opposed the bill largely because it doesn't want to reveal its donor list. I mean, that's essentially it. The NRA is a fascist organization. The NRA would support any dictator that would come to power as long as that dictator is their dictator. The NRA opposed the bill because it doesn't want to reveal its donor list, just like the KKK would never tell you its donor list, or any terror organization would never reveal its donor list. Are you kidding? NRA, Al-Qaeda, KKK, under the deal. Organizations that have more than a million dues-paying members are active in all 50 states, derive no more than 15% of their funds from corporations, and have existed for more than 10 years, would be exempt from the disclosure requirements. Well, let's see. That means the NRA, the American Association of Retired Persons, and the Humane Society will all be exempt. Now, the Humane Society, I don't worry about. AARP, I don't worry about. Neither one of those are terrorist organizations. The NRA is a terrorist organization. And take it from someone who used to be a member of the NRA. It is a terrorist organization. Five so-called watchdog groups. Listen to this. Common Cause. Public Citizen. The Campaign Legal Center. The League of Women Voters. And Democracy 21 sent a one-paragraph letter to lawmakers today urging them to go ahead, vote for the bill. Craig Holman, Public Citizens Government Affairs lobbyist, said, quote, "The exemption written for the NRA doesn't undercut the integrity of the bill itself. It was a political decision. We're uncomfortable with giving anyone any exemption. It continues to be a hard decision," end quote. Not all open government groups support the deal. Lisa Rosenberg, a government affairs consultant for the Sunlight Foundation, wrote that the deal epitomizes what's wrong with Washington. She wrote, quote, We are disheartened that some would forgive the exemption on the grounds that it is so narrow it won't open the floodgates for secret money in elections. But the simple fact that the NRA could demand such an exception in a shadowy backroom deal demonstrates why we need more, not less, sunlight on the entire process. Where does the deal-making end and backbone begin? So, the law will be passed to fill the vacuum created by the activist neo-fascist Supreme Court that seems hell-bent in decision after decision to expand the power of corporations and retract or limit the power of individuals. This is what an activist court does. This is what a fascist court does. This is what a court that is owned by corporate America does. Obviously. I mean, Jesus, you don't have to be a rocket scientist here, do you, Truth Seeker? If corporations own the Supreme Court, which they do, then does it not stand to reason that the Supreme Court would start legislating from the bench, as the right-wing vermin like to say in this country? And in that legislation from the bench, they tell America that corporations are people. How did you miss it? But this time it wasn't Republicans. Republicans don't have to do anything. All they have to do is sit back with their fingers in their body orifices saying, "You better do something, Democratic Party leadership, or we'll filibuster." Anyone who votes for a candidate because that candidate is a member of the Democratic Party is cutting his or her own throat even deeper. The hour. Eric in Canada wrote regarding hydrogen sulfide that we've been talking about, one of the toxic gases as released, being released around the site of this oil eruption and the chemicals being used to disperse it. Eric in Canada writes, "Mike, interesting fact, black powder igniting causes hydrogen sulfide. On the old sailing ships during a battle, cannon fire would create hydrogen sulfide. To combat the hydrogen sulfide gas, sailors would pee on their handkerchief and wrap it around their mouth and nose. Pee contains ammonia and neutralizes hydrogen sulfide." What are you looking at me like that for? That's something to remember. Pee in your handkerchief.
Well, I'm very surprised that, you know, Obama didn't say pray and pee in your handkerchief.
Pray and pee.
If BP won't let you have a respirator because of the bad optics, just, you know, pee on your T-shirt and wrap it around your face. I bet some local news station will put that up.
You sound a little cynical tonight, my dear.
I'm not a happy camper tonight.
I know.
This has got me extremely aggravated.
Dear Mike and Truth Seekers, this is from Sam in L.A., who used to live in Pensacola. "Dear Mike and Truth Seekers, I am slowly losing my mind as my oceans are being destroyed. You see, I never really wanted to live on land with the dummies. I always had fantasies of breathing underwater and swimming with my buddies, the dolphins. Been my dream since I could walk because I grew up in, and I mean in, the Gulf as a toddler. Virginia Beach, Jones Beach, Bremerton, and the Puget Sound, Coronado, San Diego, Malibu, Zuma, Fort Lauderdale, South Beach. I quit swimming in the ocean as much because I've trusted it less and less. Too bad. It was my safe place. Imagine if we had conquered the likes of Ronald Reagan and heeded Jimmy Carter's warning of doom and gloom. We'd have developed 40 years of infrastructure by now for green energy. Instead, we get this. They need to tear down every shred of evidence of the very existence of that creep, Ronald Reagan. And now, an acceptable monologue from Obama-rama. Nationalize BP, Halliburton, and Transocean. Pull Dick Cheney out of his hole and throw him on the tube with Obama-rama. Let them both explain why we are again the victims of homegrown corporate eco-terrorism without any solution in sight. Let's face it, the Gulf is doomed. Hurricanes and the Gulf Stream will bring death, destruction, DNA mutation, extinction to a shore near you. Then let's find out about these minerals in Afghanistan. The Soviets knew about them in the 80s, so you can bet Reagan, Bush, CIA did too. Bush-Cheney Crime Syndicate, BCCS objectives. Here they are. Supreme Court coup, hands keys to White House, to a cocaine user, draft dodger, drunk driver, sniveling known loser, and Bush's handler, the CEO of a low-level corporation by the name of Halliburton. Clearly warned that terrorists are going to weaponize commercial airplanes and fly them into tall buildings, George the Simpleton keeps himself busy, supposedly clearing brush on his Texas Hollywood set he called a ranch. Saudis launched 9/11, desired catastrophic event to suspend Constitution. Bin Laden family secretly flown out of the United States. Dumb Democrats back under control. The Bush crime family launches attack on the Taliban, supposedly to nail Bin Laden, a Saudi himself, who is never captured, drops all focus on that war. The Bush crime family launches illegal war on Iraq, but not in any way because of the oil there. Yet oil rights there have gone to the Bush crime family buddy oil companies, including BP. Obama-rama declares domestic issues a bother because he has two illegal wars to run. He ramps up U.S. forces in Afghanistan, and what do you know? There are valuable minerals in Afghanistan. Who'd have thunk it? This is my take on what the F is happening here. Forces were unleashed when Nixon was exposed for the sociopath and criminal he was. Because Nixon wasn't thrown in jail like any common criminal, those forces have had almost free rein to do their best to destroy the middle class and the democratic structure. These enemies wanted to shrink the apparatus of this democracy and its engine of reform and corporate regulation to such a size that it may be drowned in a bathtub. Violent, malevolent language with roots in pre-Nazi propaganda. And a joke, since these destructive forces have been responsible for engorging the U.S. government with crony-saturated agencies like Homeland Security. Even the nomenclature of this unwieldy personification of incompetence is well-rooted in Nazi, fascist, German propaganda. There's more here, and we'll finish it up when we come back from this break. Oh, some of you are just getting way, way, way too creative in your writing. I swear. I think we're going to have a break here. Are we having a break here? Is this, there's a break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Give him bottles of lies, and maybe he'll find his place in heaven, because he might just die. When your only friend is gone, and every time you look around, well, it all just seems to change. But hanging on is easy. We'll be right back.
what's inside your head. It's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. So, finishing up this email from Sam in L.A. So, here we are today with the president wrapped up so tight with DLC handlers, with Rahm Emanuel fully in charge, that he, Obama, has become less than a figurehead. Clearly, he did not walk into this job as a free agent ready to bring about the change he chimed over and over again during his campaign. He instead brings new meaning to the status quo. His reforms, quote, quote, were mostly written by lobbyists and Republicans, sometimes years ago, and clearly reward his corporate clients more than the general electorate. I have strong suspicions that his free will has been subjugated by powerful forces in the military, industrial, and global corporate sectors. At the same time, we have the Supreme Court staging a perhaps fatal blow to our democracy with the Citizens United decision. Addison, you, Rumsfeld, Paul Bremer, McChrystal, and the list of villains in this 40-year-old scenario goes on and on. The catastrophic event in our Gulf is a wake-up and clarion call. The future of our country and the world does stand in the balance. Obama rhetoric has gotten as nauseating as Obama-rama. It's becoming more and more like Bush's bossy drone with all the aw shucks folksisms and superstitious mumbo-jumbo prayers and the like when we need cold, hard science and the guillotine. Now, let me be clear, not for Obama, maybe Rahm, but I do like Obama. Under different circumstances, he'd be fine, but... dot, dot, dot. From Sam in L.A. There's something posted at my website in the comments section. The comment says, this is from Pandora's Box. Obama's speech tells me that they are truly afraid of a natural gas buildup and subsequent explosion in the 10 square miles surrounding the site, creating a tsunami that could take out Florida. Pressure at the wellhead is 100,000 pounds per square inch. They are keeping something ominous secret. Of course, they always do this. Really? Is that, okay, where's my three or four scientific advisors to the program? 100,000 pounds per square inch at the wellhead, natural gas, explosion, tsunami that could take out Florida. Maybe somebody will comment on that. I don't have a clue. From Jen, Mike, I hope you and yours are well. I just read Obama's speech, and I'm so highly disappointed. Is this the same guy I voted for? Seriously, I think back to candidate Obama, and now I see President Obama, and I swear I'm looking at two different men. Barnum was right about suckers. Guess I fell for it, but I was just hoping once he was out of the Senate, he'd become his own man, and that his words would actually mean something than just fluff pieces. Well, the text of today's speech told me one thing. Not only is Congress owned by corporate America, but the office of the presidency is nothing but corporate America's mouthpiece. Say goodbye to beaches and sea life. I pray that if there is any sort of good cloud being in the sky, he will keep hurricanes away from the oil spill so it's not carried inland. My husband and I have recently gotten rid of our cable, no longer paying $100 for nothing. I was starting to think that maybe it was a bad idea. Now I'm sure it wasn't. I think if I had to watch Obama tonight, I would have put my foot through the television. I'm disconnecting from corporate America as much as possible now. No dumbed-down shows for me or mind-numbing reality TV. Any shows I really want to watch, I will see on the net or by DVD. Corporate America isn't going to tell me what to think anymore. All my best to you and yours. Jen, P.S., may I make a small suggestion? When Molly is a little older, introduce her to the Twilight Zone series. Great teacher for what she needs to look out for in America today. Yeah, you're probably right, Jen. Although I think the Twilight Zone series was a little bit too tame for what kids are facing now. Bizarre stuff, huh? This thing from Jason Leopold writing at truthout.org. Just a bit of it here, because it's fairly long. Jason writes, nearly 5,000 miles from the oil spill catastrophe in the Gulf of Mexico, BP and its culture of cost-cutting are contributing to another environmental mess. According to internal BP documents obtained by Truthout, and after interviewing more than a dozen employees over the past month, the Prudhoe Bay oil field in remote corner of North America on Alaska's North Slope is in danger. After two serious oil spills and other mishaps, the BP employees fingered a long list of safety issues that have not been adequately addressed, making the Prudhoe Bay oil field vulnerable to a devastating accident that could potentially rival the havoc in the Gulf. Mark Kovac, who has worked for BP on Alaska's North Slope for more than three decades, said, quote, the condition of the Prudhoe Bay field is a lot worse and, in my opinion, a lot more dangerous. We still have hundreds of miles of rotting pipe ready to break that needs to be replaced. We are totally unprepared for a large spill, end quote. Kovac, a mechanic and welder who is the steward of the United Steelworkers Union Local 4959, said a lot of employees share his feelings, but, quote, don't want to risk their jobs for speaking out, end quote. Kovac said he was willing to take the risk because BP has been slow to deal with the Prudhoe Bay problems and that, quote, many lives are at stake, end quote. Some of the employees, speaking anonymously, said BP follows, quote, an operate to failure, end quote, attitude, operate to failure. Kovac said that means BP Alaska avoids spending money on upkeep and instead runs the equipment until it breaks. Typical of this problem, the employees said, was an oil spill that was discovered on November 29, 2009, when a BP Alaska employee performing a routine check discovered oil pouring out from a 2-foot-long gash on the bottom of a 25-year-old pipeline at BP's Lisburn, Alaska facility. According to an incident report from the Alaska Department of Environmental and Conservation's Division of Spill and Response, quote, the spill was from an 18-inch, three-phase common line carrying a mixture of crude oil, produced water, and natural gas, end quote. The report said, quote, BP Alaska's preliminary estimate for the total volume of oily material released is 45,828 gallons, end quote. The circumstances behind that spill are now the subject of a criminal and civil investigation by the FBI, the Environmental Protection Agency, and Alaska State authorities. BP blamed the rupture on ice plugs that build up inside the pipeline, which caused increased pressure and finally the rupture. Ice plugs! It's not our fault! This is goddamn ice plugs! It's not our fault! We didn't do anything in the Gulf. We didn't know this was going to happen. It's not our fault. We had all the provisions to take care of the walruses off of the coast of Louisiana. We're ready to take care of the harp seals and the walruses and make sure the ice flows didn't run into New Orleans when if anything happened. And up in Prudhoe Bay, well, those ice plugs. Oh, my God. And there they sat today, these gray, pasty, white men sitting at that table. Why do all corporate executives look sick? I mean, they all do. They just sit there. And these ineffectual members of Congress hammer them. Well, I don't know. Well, I I wouldn't respond that way, Senator or Representative or whoever you are. You know, we insist that all environmental laws be followed. We insist that our safety record will stand up to anyone's except BP's. They're a mess, aren't they? And there they sit. There they all sat today. Did you notice that? Well, you know, and I have to control these animal-like instincts, but when I see a lineup like that, I get this overpowering urge of what it would feel like to just pull back and smash my fist so far into their pasty faces that it would come out the other side. You know, you ever get that feeling, huh? You just want to draw back and just put everything you've got behind it. Just slam them right in the face. Until their eyes split and their nose erupts with a gusher of blood and their teeth fall out. You ever get that feeling? Huh? Do ya? Well, that's a feeling I got today.
'Cause I saw it on TV. I'm
Seekers, gather round the campfire. It's more Mike Malloy.
With that gun in your hand, you can take your revenge, but you'll still feel bad. There must be more to life than lucky strikes and some unlucky ones.
It's 9 before the hour. Michael just sent me something here. While all this stuff is going on, Senator Orrin Hatch, this religious nutbag from Utah, he wants the unemployed in this country to face mandatory drug tests. Now think about this for just a second. How many millions and millions of people are unemployed right now? Orrin Hatch has offered an amendment wherein welfare and unemployment beneficiaries would have to pass a drug test to qualify for programs. Hatch, according to thehill.com, Hatch introduced an amendment to the tax extenders bill that would require those who are applying for some of the benefits in that bill, including unemployment and welfare benefits, to pass a drug test in exchange for benefits. Hatch said in a statement, "Drugs are a scourge on our society, hurting children, families, and communities alike. This amendment is a way to help people get off of drugs, to become productive and healthy members of society, while ensuring that valuable taxpayer dollars aren't wasted." Oh, my God. Under the Hatch Amendment, individuals who fail to qualify for benefits because they failed a drug test wouldn't necessarily be jailed, but would be enrolled in a state or federal treatment program. You right-wing dumb bastards. You see, all of this fascist stuff comes from you Republicans. Criminalize misfortune. It's the American way. Speaking of that, Mike, I'm writing anonymously. Today I called my state's unemployment commission office to ask about my unemployment benefits. A very cordial person told me that in my case, they would terminate on the 26th of this month, the last payment being 12% of the regular ones, so far, far less than normal. He explained that these benefits came from employer-paid taxes and that, well, they run out. Easy to understand, right? So this is how Congress and Obama treat the unemployed. But the banks and Wall Street got TARP money, remember? And Bloomberg News filed suit to discover that about $20 trillion were given to the banks and Wall Street. But unemployed Americans, well, they can go to hell. This is the country I live in and paid my taxes to my entire working life, 50 years worth. But when I am in trouble, I'm expendable. And of course, the banks are calling each week asking when I will pay my credit card bills. The landlord is going to evict, and those little white trucks from the utility companies will be coming to shut things off for lack of payment. But Congress is paid, and so is the president, and so are the bankers. I'd like to see one congressman live without income, one banker live without income. But for us out here on Main Street, well, we're expected to work magic. I don't need more evidence about where America is headed. And he requests that I call him nameless in the USA. I wonder what the teabaggers will do when they no longer will be able to draw their Social Security check and be covered by Medicare. Oh, man. Okay. A couple more emails here. And I guess we'll take some calls when we come back. This is from Jeanette. Subject line is fast forward. Jeanette writes, what we're leaving to the kids. Yeah, I don't have kids, but I have two nieces, and it saddens me and angers me. I was thinking recently about the strangeness of life, specifically that once we're born, we can acquire knowledge of what happened before we were born. We can have consciousness, but we most likely can't do that in a forward direction. Like, we can learn about how people lived during the Roman Empire, but unless there's an afterlife, reincarnation, or some form of consciousness separate from our bodies, we won't know what happens 5 minutes after we die, much less what our kids or grandkids or nieces or nephews' lives are like 60 years from now, or what's happening 500 years from now. I don't say that meaning it's depressing, just that it's really weird. Someday the human race might make contact with species from other planets or live on other planets, and there's no way to know what it will be like. When you think about how much life changed just during the 20th century, it's kind of mind-boggling. I tend to dismiss psychics as either a scam, like religion. I dismiss taking drugs or having some type of mental illness. I know a couple of people who claim they had past lives, but I'm skeptical. I wonder if there are people who do see things that happen in the future, and whether their visions come true. If so, time's not as linear as we thought. But that brings me back to where I started. There's no way of knowing. Am I agnostic or what? Maybe I should start reading sci-fi again. Or Vonnegut. From Jeanette. We shall return after the break, unless we trip into a space-time hole and never show up again. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. Do you want to talk? The number is 877-996-2556. So give us a call if you are so inclined. I'm laughing about something I'll share with you in just a second. Nora writes, regarding drug tests for the unemployed, hey, our drinking water is tainted with pharmaceuticals that can't be removed by water treatment. Could any of us pass such a test? No. Okay, now, let me just say that one of our science advisors to the program has already debunked this and said it's nonsense. But let me share it with you anyway. And Ron in Fort Wayne, pay attention here because you sent this to me. I don't know why I'm sharing this with you. I guess just for poops and giggles. But here you go. Under the heading Summary of Expectations, at some point, the drilled hole in the earth will enlarge itself beneath the wellhead to weaken the area the wellhead rests upon. The intense pressure will then push the wellhead off the hole, allowing a direct, unrestricted flow of oil, etc. The hole will continue to increase in size, allowing more and more oil to rise into the Gulf. After several billion barrels of oil have been released, the pressure within the massive cavity 5 miles beneath the ocean floor will begin to normalize. This will allow the water, under the intense pressure at 1 mile deep, to be forced into the hole and the cavity where the oil was. The temperature at that depth is near 400 degrees, possibly more. The water will be vaporized and turned into steam, creating an enormous amount of force, lifting the Gulf floor. It is difficult to know how much water will go down to the core, and therefore it is not possible to fully calculate the rise of the floor. The tsunami wave this will create will be anywhere from 20 to 80 feet high, possibly more. Then the floor will fall into the now vacant chamber. This is how nature will seal the hole. Depending on the height of the tsunami, the ocean debris, oil, and existing structures that will be washed away on shore and inland, this will leave an area from 50 to 200 miles inland devoid of life. Even if the debris is cleaned up, the contaminants that will be in the ground and water supply will prohibit repopulation of these areas for an unknown number of years. Yes, I think we're in big-time trouble, without a doubt. Okay, well, Ron, like I said, I submitted this to one of our science advisors who emailed me back and said simply, hold on a minute, damn it. I'll give it to you in just a second. And said simply, here you go. Do you want me to tear this apart, or would you settle for this is crap? If geology worked this way, we'd have been extinct long ago. So pay no attention to that. Like I said, I just read it for poops and giggles. Ah! Oh, my God. Oh, by the way, Jeremy Scahill, writing at thenation.com, points out that the U.S. military, the Pentagon, is still buying most of its oil and gas from BP. Yeah, most of its gas from BP. Why, of course. Of course. Nora is in Minneapolis. Hello, Nora.
Hey there, Mike.
How are you?
You know, our local TV station, one of them was wise enough, I thought, to play a segment talking about the stages of mourning and about the first stage of mourning being blame and anger. And I believe them that we are really communally going through intense mourning because our biosphere has been murdered. And, you know, it puts me into a huge stage of PTSD because my son died at the age of 22, and I think I know why. He did the neck thing, you know, where the autoerotic asphyxiation, but he had been spending most of his loving time hanging out with the undersea mammals, and I believe he was so such an enlightened being that he saw this future. That's why I think he left the world at that time, because this world did not deserve him to continue living here.
Yeah, well, a lot of people can say things like that about loved ones, but I think I'm sorry for your loss. I really am. Nora, thanks. I appreciate you checking in. Charlie is driving in Utah, listening on Sirius. Hello, Charlie.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Glad I can get back to you. We got cut short last night when I called in. I was the last caller there. We were talking about the Sirius. I have a caller invite.
Hey, Charlie, I'm sorry. I'm going to have to ask you to call back. You're in a bad cell or something. You're distorting all over the place. Give it a minute and call us back, okay? Thanks, Charlie. Sorry. I've got to get to this. Oh, yeah. One time, not so long ago, Kathy and I drove up to Toledo, Ohio, from Atlanta. And in southern Ohio, along I-75, we're driving along, and all of a sudden, Kathy shrieks. I said, "What?" I thought maybe a semi was coming. She's pointing out the side window. And there is the the Touchdown Jesus, this huge statue of what is supposed to be Jesus, you know, some white man with long hair from the Middle East, which didn't exist. But what the hell, you know, the Christians are really funny people. So here's this Touchdown Jesus, this thing sticking up out of the ground with its arms up, and there's a cross there, and it's just as though, and you see this thing, and I don't know, it looks like some kind of a beast crawling out of the earth, or a ghost, or some religious right-winger's wet dream. It's just horrifying. But there it is, right alongside Interstate 75. And when we saw that 4 or 5 years ago, no, it was before Molly was born, I guess about 6 years ago, hadn't been there that long. And we made, as we buzzed by, we made the usual ridiculous comments and about the sickness of some of these Christian freaks. I mean, building something like that. Well, guess what? God struck it with lightning. He did. Yes, he did. Monroe, Ohio fire officials set damage at $700,000 after lightning struck and burned the 62-foot-high Jesus Christ and an adjacent amphitheater at Solid Rock Church late yesterday. Church leaders are vowing to rebuild the iconic King of Kings statue, also dubbed Touchdown Jesus, which was valued at around $300,000. Oh, my God. So they're going to rebuild it, you know? Their sky spook hurls a thunderbolt and blows it into a million pieces of carbonated nothing, and these freaks are going to build it again, right? Ah! Oh, my God! Go ahead, boys. Go ahead. Church leaders also plan to repair the amphitheater and the pond, and said the structures were all insured. Insurance adjusters are expected at the site tomorrow. Oh, in the pond, all the fish are dead or dying. But the preacher there is hoping that on the third day, they're all going to start swimming again.
Oh, no. phrases, long as I got my plastic Jesus riding on the dashboard on my car.
He watches C-SPAN so you don't have to. It's more Mike Malloy.
And my travels through the nations with my plastic Jesus, I'll go far. Riding down a thoroughfare with a nose up in the air.
Ron in Fort Wayne says, I hurt his feelings. Hey, Ron, that scared the hell out of me, too. That's the reason I sent it off to our science advisors real quick. All right, time for a little Kurt Vonnegut before we go to your calls. This is The End Is Near by Kurt Vonnegut, and he wrote this October 29th, 2004. It's very quick. Listen up. I'm writing this before the election, so I cannot know whether George W. Bush or John F. Kerry will be our president, God willing, for the next 4 years. These two Nordic aristocratic multimillionaires are virtually twins and as unlike most of the rest of us as a couple of cross-eyed albinos. But this much I find timely. Both candidates were and still are members of the exclusive secret society at Yale called Skull and Bones. That means that no matter which one wins, we will have a skull and bones president at a time when entire vertebrate species, because of how we have poisoned the topsoil, the waters, and the atmosphere, are becoming, hey presto, nothing but skulls and bones. Poetry. What was the beginning of this end? Some might say Adam and Eve and the apple of knowledge. I say it was Prometheus, a titan, a son of gods who, in Greek myth, stole fire from his parents and gave it to human beings. The gods were so mad they chained him naked to a rock with his back exposed and had eagles eat his liver. And it is now plain that the gods were right to do that. Our close cousins, the gorillas and orangutans and chimps and gibbons, have gotten along just fine all this time while eating raw vegetable matter, whereas we not only prepare hot meals, but have now all but destroyed this once salubrious planet as a life support system in fewer than 200 years, mainly by making thermodynamic whoopee with fossil fuels. The Englishman Michael Faraday built the first dynamo capable of turning mechanical energy into electricity only 173 years ago. The first oil well in the United States, now a dry hole, was drilled in Titusville, PA by Edwin Drake only 145 years ago. The German Carl Benz built the first automobile powered by an internal combustion engine only 119 years ago. The American Wright brothers, of course, built and flew the first airplane only 101 years ago. It was powered by gasoline. You want to talk about irresistible whoopee? A booby trap. Fossil fuels so easily set alight. Yes, and as Bush and Kerry are out campaigning, we are presently touching off nearly the very last whiffs and drops and chunks of them. All lights are about to go out. No more electricity. All forms of transportation are about to stop, and the planet Earth will soon have a crust of skulls and bones and dead machinery. And nobody can do a thing about it. It's too late in the game. Don't spoil the party, but here's the truth. We have squandered our planet's resources, including air and water, as though there were no tomorrow. So now, there isn't going to be one. So there goes the junior prom, but that's not the half of it. Kurt Vonnegut. Almost 6 years ago. John Centers, a Monroe County, or a Monroe, Ohio assistant fire chief who lives about a mile from the church, said he was outside on his deck watching Monday night's thunderstorm when he saw a very bright flash of lightning accompanied by loud thunderclap. At first, he didn't think much of it, quote, because there had already been so many ground strikes that night, end quote, Mr. Centers said, but he could tell that the lightning had struck fairly close and, quote, it was very significant ground strike, end quote. Centers said the pattern of light flashed all the way to the ground and was in the general direction of the church. He soon realized that must have been the lightning that struck the statue, because within 4 minutes of his witnessing the strike, firefighters were being called to the blazing statue, and it burned quickly. Kim Peace, a police dispatcher, said, "It burned to the ground. The whole statue is gone." Authorities on Tuesday were urging motorists to resist the temptation to stop on Interstate 75 and snap photos, fearing that drivers pulling on and off the berm could cause crashes. The Ohio State Highway Patrol is issuing warnings to those who stop and will soon start issuing citations. The large King of Kings statue was a Butler County landmark since it was erected in 2004. But now, it's gone.
You'll learn all you need to learn at my ministry. And pay no attention to the slanderous lies. I never had my hand between that young boy's thighs. I'm with the God Squad, so listen good. Hear my back.
Ready to make nice, it's Mike Malloy.
It is 25 before the hour. All right, how about some Samuel Taylor Coleridge? Somebody just sent me a couple of lines, and I remember the rhyme of the Ancient Mariner in high school, and even then, as you know, as unsophisticated as most high school juniors are, it was still a scary poem. Just a couple of stanzas. Listen to this. Down dropped the breeze, the sails dropped down. 'Twas sad as sad could be, and we did speak only to break the silence of the sea. All in a hot and copper sky, the bloody sun at noon, right up above the mast did stand no bigger than the moon. Day after day, day after day, we stuck nor breath nor motion. As idle as a painted ship upon a painted ocean. Water, water everywhere, and all the boards did shrink. Water, water everywhere, nor any drop to drink. The very deep did rot, O Christ, that ever this should be. Yea, slimy things did crawl with legs upon the slimy sea. About in reel and rout the death fires danced at night. The water like a witch's oils burnt green and blue and white. Rhyme of the Ancient Mariner. Samuel Taylor Coleridge. You gotta go back and read that. It is an ancient mariner, and he stoppeth one of three. By thy long gray beard and glittering eye, now wherefore stoppest thou me? Go ahead, read it. You'll love it. Where are we? Here we go. Chris is in Menomo, British Columbia. Is that right, Menomo? Every time you call, I can't...
I'm going to send you some Nanaimo bars.
Just yeah, send me some Nanaimo bars.
I was just wondering about the little touchdown Jesus down there. Now, I looked him up online. He looks more like, you know, sinking in quicksand Jesus or being dragged back to hell Jesus.
Oh, it's awful. Oh, I know. It's awful. The reason they call it touchdown is because his hands are up in the air like he's going, goal, or whatever they, you know.
But in the old-fashioned cartoons, it's the same thing they did with the guy with the little beige hat and he's sinking in quicksand. Anyways, when they do rebuild it, could you go by and take a picture of it, film, picture, whatever, and submit it to Fail Blog? And when they have the little, they'll inevitably do this because it burned down the first time because of lightning. They'll put a little lightning rod on top of it and just label it either science win or Jesus fail.
Sure, I'll do that, Chris.
Much obliged. Cheers.
All right, thank you. Cheers to you, too. No, that was, it's a scary, I'll tell you what you ought to go check out. Go to YouTube. And There's something I want you to see. It's from our old neighborhood when we lived in Atlanta. Did you see that? The Krog Street Tunnel video? Oh, you posted. Oh, that's right. Never mind. Go to MikeMalloy.com and it's there. There's a street that is down in towards the inner city of Atlanta, Krog, K-R-O-G. And there's an underpass. It goes under a whole huge rail yards are down there. And a lot of artists from that area have decorated the walls of this street tunnel. And a couple of artists, they'll show it to you in a stop-action film or video. I want you to check this out. It's the Krog Street Tunnel. You can look at it on YouTube or go to MikeMalloy.com, and it's right there. You'll love it. It's a message to BP. Orion, is that right, in Pullman, Washington? Orion?
Yep, that's right. How are you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Oh, I'm not doing too bad.
Oh, good.
I was just actually wondering if it was really God who struck down the statue. I thought it was Thor, actually.
You thought it was who?
Thor, the god of thunder.
Well, that could be, yeah.
I mean, he does have a hammer, and Jesus was nailed to a cross.
He does, indeed.
But anyway, you know, I was looking at the pictures and the films from this oil spill when it was first going on, and I was just wondering if anybody who had half a brain could look at this and think that it was really just 5,000 gallons of oil a day, and how it made sense for BP to be counting on those kinds of numbers to keep, you know, whatever kind of face they could save intact.
Right.
So, I mean, I don't know. I look at things like this and I get so angry and disillusioned, and then I hear things like you said tonight about Orrin Hatch's top priority, making sure that, you know, unemployed people can pass a piss test. So it kind of puts things in perspective for me about what really matters and how just nobody seems to care. And yeah. It's upsetting. So,
well, Orrin Hatch has to do that, Orion, because Orrin Hatch is a religious screwball. And if you were, and thanks, Orion, I appreciate you checking in. If you were to question Orrin Hatch to any degree on this catastrophe brought about by British Petroleum, Orrin Hatch would tell you it's just God working in mysterious ways, his wonders to reveal. In the meantime, let's get all the unemployed in and drug test them. I mean, these are the kinds of people that run the United States government. Are you surprised, truth seeker, that we are where we are? Please don't be surprised. Don't be surprised. We live in an armed madhouse, as Greg Palast said. I think that's from Vonnegut, too. But he used it as the title of his book, Armed Madhouse. That's where we live. All hell is coming unglued, and Orrin Hatch wants to urine test people who are on unemployment. And the Democrats in the U.S. House have decided to grant an exemption to the NRA so that the NRA executives can funnel as much money as they want to influence elections, and we're not allowed to know who is making the contribution. Wow. So, you know, we can talk till we're blue in the face about, I would just suggest that the, how many people live in Florida? 20 million? No, couldn't be that many. 18 million, 20 million? It's probably time for people in Florida to move. I don't know where to tell you to go, but why would you stay in Florida? What was there ever in Florida that made you move there to begin with if you weren't born there? Most people who go to Florida do so to retire or to reinvent themselves. One last chance. I lived in the Tampa Bay area twice and lived in Jacksonville once. And I swear to God, during those times, the first time was in 65, when the army was breathing down my neck. The other time, 68 and 69. Oh, and in 61, I believe, too. 62? I don't know. Three times. And every time I lived in Florida, even though I was young at the time, I thought, you know, this place is insane. It's crazy. Everyone here is nuts. No offense to people in Florida who are listening to the program, but you know what I'm talking about. What's the author, Kathy, whose books you have read? Carl Hiaasen, yeah, former columnist for the Miami Herald, who has written how many? 15 books on Florida. Funny as hell. Kathy's read every one of them. And he's right. Hiaasen is right. It's just crazy. Crazy. But I would suggest that everybody in Florida get out. Pretty soon, you're not going to have any water to drink because as this oil gusher encircles your peninsula, you are going to find that the groundwater in Florida is chock-a-block with hydrocarbons. You'll not be able to drink the crap. Plus, once surrounded by this oil spill, you'll not be able to breathe without giving yourself hideous lung diseases. So, good Lord, even as I say that crap, I think about, you know, the possible truth behind it, and it's pretty scary. But take it from your friendly left-wing radio host, if you're listening in Florida, if you live in Florida, get out of town. Go. You better leave. Because I-75 in Ohio has this touchdown Jesus. I-75 in Tampa is going to have, well, let's say a huge traffic jam. We'll be right back. This sound like similar to what I shared with you a moment ago, but there's no tsunami here. So take this with as many grains of salt as you want to. This is from Eric. My credentials: I've worked on sour gas blowouts and was a hydrogen sulfide safety consultant in the Canadian oil field for 17 years. When they were doing the top kill, they may have ruptured the casing, causing a new leak. It could develop into the worst man-made disaster ever. This could be our last mistake. A leak around the outside of the casing is rumored at this point. But just so we understand, I'm going to explain what a crater blowout is. Yes, a freaking crater blowout. The blowout most feared by the oil industry. A well consists of a number of, let's say for the layman, layers. Pipe within pipe within pipe, starting with what is referred to as surface casing. Then intermediate, what is referred to as a long string that goes to the bottom of the well, ending in what is called a shoe. These layers of casing are added to the well during the drilling process. Here is what may have happened. When they tried to do the top kill, they may have ruptured casing, as I mentioned previously. Now, here's what may have happened and the possible ramifications of this type of leak. Scenario number one, unrestricted flow can cause wear on the pipe. As the oil and gas flow for the formation, it picks up small pieces of sand. This material has a sandblasting effect, weakening the pipe and increasing the possibility of rupture. This is referred to as washing out. If the pipe is overpressured, it may rupture. I've seen a bent-over drill pipe wash out in 24 hours on a surface blowout. Simply put, they may have overpressured the casing and ruptured it. If oil and gas are coming out of a small rupture inside of the casing, it will start to wash out and get larger. Number two, a bad cement job. As they insert the casing, the pipe is cemented into place. By the sound of it, they have what is referred to as communicate between the layers of casing. Pipe is rated for different pressures, less as you work your way out. Possibly the cement may have failed and overpressured the next layer, and so on. Here's what could happen. As the layers of casing start to leak and the pressure builds up, they rupture, putting pressure up the next layer and so on. When it reaches the layer referred to as the surface casing, it ruptures and leaks on the outside of the casing. As the leak in the pipe washes out the material around the casing, it starts to liquefy and rise with the gas and oil blowing the material out around the casing at an ever-increasing rate as the pipe washes out, creating a crater. There will be no hope of capturing any oil at all. The flow would increase to staggering levels. The Gulf would be ecologically destroyed, and possibly the oceans. If a crater blowout happens, we're all screwed. Thank you, BP, for killing us all. Could this be considered attempted murder of the planet? I think so. Thank you, Eric. Well, what do you think, Kathy? Huh? What do you think we ought to do? Cat's got your tongue? I just meant any way you wanted to take it. Perez is in Santa Rosa, California.
Hi, Mike.
Hey, Perez.
You know, I was worried what I was going to suggest was a little too dark, but I think I'm okay now.
Yeah, right.
Holy cow, buddy. Oh, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was raised in Oklahoma around a bunch of those crickets and grasshoppers, them oil wells. I know that smell and the whole business. I worked on drilling rig, you know, one of my many jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And I know how these people think, and they're capping off the wells in 73 and everything, you know, to create the shortage. But here's what I'm thinking. And remember, I talked to you before. I know we have just a few minutes, Mike, but I talked to you last year or something about I think these people have a death wish and everything, but I've started to realize that it's something more insidious than that. The corporations are sitting on the most piles of money they've ever had in history.
Yeah.
And the banks, instead of Obama demanding and ordering them to make credit available to people, he just gave them the money first and then urged them. So in other words, I think they're waiting for, and the people have a death wish, but it's for the little people. Supreme
right.
Court's in on this game. They all meet in secret somewhere. I really believe this stuff. People might think I'm crazy, but I'm telling you, there's movers and shakers in this world that are way, way above Rush Limbaugh's pay grade, you know?
Oh, sure, sure.
And
Limbaugh is just a punk. He's
a punk.
He's a
front man.
Yeah, he's a carnival barker.
He's like one of the lollipop kids on Alice in Wonderland.
Right,
you know?
And he gets paid well for being a carnival barker.
Oh, no. And there'll be a special place for him, too. But I think here's the thing that really made me mad. And the way they foisted this on us was the 9/11, that hoax, or that reaction to that. And Obama mentioned it today. I couldn't listen to the rest of it. I couldn't stand it. When he said about we're going to search out our troops in the field or searching out a cover, wherever it may be, here's what I say. Al-Qaeda's just a piss ant. Give me back my rights and let me take my chances with them. Come and get me, you guys. Come on. Come and get us. What are we afraid of?
Yeah, I hear you. Well, if enough people started feeling that way or felt that way back when George W. Bush was ordering our military into two wars, maybe it wouldn't happen. Hey, Perez, we're out of time. Thanks, man. Appreciate it. Boy, what a fun program tonight, huh? Wasn't this fun? Maybe tomorrow night, let's see. We stream video, so maybe tomorrow night we should, I don't know, bring in, let's bring in an oil-soaked pelican. You want to do that? No? Molly got some caterpillars and put them in this net thing, and they formed chrysalises, and the chrysalises split open yesterday, and she has three butterflies, and we're about to let them go tomorrow. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.